Verizon just turned on 5G across the country. With the coverage of 5G nationwide and more cities, the unprecedented performance of Ultra Wideband, the fastest 5G in the world. Ultra Wideband is so fast, you can download an album in seconds. Verizon 5G won't just change how your phone works, it will change how businesses do everything. This is the 5G America's been waiting for, only from Verizon. 5G Ultra Wideband available only in parts of select cities. 5G nationwide available in 1,800 plus cities. Global claim based on open signal independent analysis during the period January 31st through April 30th, 2020.
Everybody, and welcome back to From Complex to Queens, Amazing Avenue's Monologue Podcast. I'm Steve Seifer, and I'm joined this week by Lucas Vlahos, Ken Levin, and Thomas Henderson, the entire team. So, how's everybody doing this week?
Pretty good.
Pretty good.
Yeah, I'm doing well. How are you doing?
Good.
Be nice if my fantasy team could, you know, suck a little bit less, but we can't get everything we want, you know? Just very glad to see DJ Moore become a number the third wide receiver on his own team. You know, real cool.
I'm sure all of that is sucky, but I didn't understand any of it.
Someone got it. Ringo got it. Ringo knows what I'm talking about.
Shout out to Ringo Starr.
Good old Ringo. Definitely should come on the podcast.
100%.
Ringo, you're welcome anytime.
I'll email him. We're buddies.
No, he's too busy signing fan mail. He's got no time.
That's true. All right. Well, promote, extend, trade. You thought that you're having like a your fantasy team is having a bad day. Well, in 15-19, this guy had a really bad day. Montezuma, he welcomed Hernando Cortez into.
Yeah, Montezuma did have a bad day. You know.
Yes.
That's my favorite. Buddy comedy, Montezuma's bad day.
Jesus Christ.
He welcomed Hernando Cortez into Tenochtitlan, and it was great fanfare, and obviously that would turn out to be a pretty bad idea.
Yes.
So what other blunders in history here? We'll rank them, because that was definitely a blunder. I tried to pick a variety of bad ideas here, because obviously there have been a lot of bad things. So, first up, we have the Mars Climate Orbiter, and it burned up in Mars's atmosphere, and the entire $300 million mission was aborted because Lockheed Martin was using the metric system, and NASA was using American units of measurement.
God damn it.
That's so bad.
In 1962, Decca, the record label, they auditioned two up-and-coming bands, and they signed Brian Poole and the Tremolos, and they did not sign the Beatles. And finally, in 1978, in exchange for a $20,000 pay cut, 20th Century Fox signed over all of the merchandising rights for the Star Wars franchise to George Lucas.
Jeez.
Oof.
Those are all three pretty big blunders.
Alright, so how are we ranking them, like, are we ranking them in terms of badness, right? Are we, like, extending the blunder that was the worst?
Yeah, however you want to have, whatever one you think is the worst, be it such a bad loss of money, or just a bad idea, period, or just, like, come on, guys, what are you doing?
Alright, then I'm 100% extending the NASA one, because, like, first of all, United States, fix your shit. Among said shit, get on the metric system, please, like the rest of the civilized world. As a scientist, I beg you. And second, no one thought to check this. These numbers, they're like, it should have been immediately obvious that that number doesn't make sense. Like...
That yeah, we have two different numbers. Out. It's fine. Don't worry about it. I'm sure nothing bad will happen.
See, I think I'm going to trade passing up on the Beatles solely because Ringo Starr is a friend of the show.
Uh-huh. That's true.
That's a beef.
Uh-huh. These are all bad. The Star Wars one, I don't know that anyone could have foreseen Star Wars becoming what it is. Like, I can understand why you would say, yeah, we'll take the money on hand rather than gambling that this no-name director pitching a ridiculous idea with technology that doesn't exist yet.
Didn't George Lucas famously not believe in Star Wars? Didn't he bet, like, a lot of the gross to Steven Spielberg?
They had to that might have been
the movies he made before.
I don't think
it was Star Wars. I think it was Cocoon, maybe?
Something. They had an agreement about something about their profits of their first three movies each, and who would make more. I don't remember exactly. But yeah, Star Wars was a ridiculous idea. The fact that it's become what, like, the phenomenon it is like a 1 in a million chance.
I would say passing on the Beatles is also, like, if you don't see that the Beatles are obviously going to become big, then you probably shouldn't be in the music industry.
Yes.
Like even if, like, you have differing opinions on the Beatles, because everyone has different opinions on them. It's just like, you could see the objective, like, oh yeah, I could see how they could become big.
I wonder what Brian Poole and the Tremolos are doing right now. Makes you wonder.
Mm. Not whatever the two extant members of the Beatles are doing.
That is true. Pete Best.
See, but at least those two, circling back to the space one again, right? Like, at least the Star Wars and Beatles ones were like, you had to guess about the direction the trends to go. The space one is literally, check your fucking math!
Yeah, like, that should have been gone over many, many times and addressed.
Oh, that one's just dumbfounding.
And to think what we could have discovered.
Yeah. Maybe we might have found water on Mars sooner. There is water on Mars, though. We know that for sure now. Elon Musk might be a creepy internet weirdo, but at least he's dumping his money into going to Mars, so.
Definitely worse things to dump your money in, I guess.
Yeah, plenty of worse rich people than Elon Musk, let's put it that way.
I still can't believe no one checked. I just want to be in the room for, like, when they realized, like, oh, you were using the metric system? Like, what?
I like to think somebody was like, yeah, these numbers, they might not add up. Do you want me to look at it? And the guy was just like, no.
Here's the thing I don't get. Why are they using imperial units in the first place? Like, when you do science in college, the classes are taught in metric, not imperial. No. So why the fuck are they using imperial units? Or whatever you call U.S. units. I don't fucking know.
Because this is America.
Yep, America. It
has a huge eagle on it.
Right.
Like, just painted on the side.
So irritating.
Well, I would hope that they make sure that they look over all of their calculations with a very, very big magnifying glass now after that. All right, so let's head over now to the CPBL and KBO and NPB. So first up are the Unilions, and last week the Taiwan series started, their equivalent of the World Series, and the Unilions took game one, but games 2, 3, and 4 went to the brothers. In the first game, basically the Lions got shut down completely, and then in game 4 is a little bit more competitive, but it still went their brothers' way. So with their backs against the wall, down 3-1, the Lions gave the ball to Brock Dykshorn for game 5.
The king.
Yeah, and he did throw a quality start in game one, and he was even better this time. He threw a complete game shutout for the Lions, so you really can't do better than that.
At Mets, you know what to do.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Then for game 6, they gave the ball to Tim Melville. He was pretty shaky when he pitched in game 2, but again, he was a lot better this time around, and he gave up one unearned run over 7 innings, so not bad. The thing is, though, even if he did pitch poorly, the Lions still probably would have won since they scored 12 runs on the night. So that would have been, that would have worked out either way.
Yeah.
So they forced a game 7. and Teddy Stankovic pitched for the Lions, and Ariel Miranda pitched for the Brothers. Both pitchers were good when they pitched in Game 3. Stankovic gave up one run over seven innings, and Miranda gave up one run over nine. So the Lions in Game 7, they scored a run in the first inning, the second inning, the third inning. They basically were nickel and diming Miranda, but the Brothers put up a four spot in the fourth inning, and they took the lead. And they held on to it until the seventh inning when the Lions put up a four spot of their own. And Chi-Chi Chen put the exclamation point of the night with a two-run homer. And they held on. The Lions put Brock Stikeshorn in to close the game out. And the Unipresident Lions are the 2020 CPBL champions. Their 10th championship in franchise history.
And there was much rejoicing.
Yeah, like we picked a random – well, not really – random, but an adopted team is like good. That's awesome.
Yeah, absolutely.
For sure.
Mm-hmm. And the CPBL, of course, you know, the season is now over, but they're the first major professional league to start back up in early May. Over the course of the year, they progressively had more and more fans come in. By the end of the season, they had a few hundred thousand, you know, with the entire league. Obviously, it's down as compared to last season, but it's still a million times better than anywhere else. And basically shows you that as long as everyone takes the proper precautions and the league takes things seriously and the players take things seriously, you can have fans in the stands. So I hope Major League Baseball, Minor League Baseball, everybody follows the format that CPBL used. And in 2021, if we're lucky, we get some fans in the stands.
Steve, are you insinuating that Major League Baseball didn't do a good job of managing the coronavirus?
It is a possibility.
Oh, interesting. CC or at Rob Manfred.
I mean, the thing is, like, bubbles are not supposed to have, you know, leaky entrances or exits. Like, it's supposed to be sealed, and when your bubbles are very porous, it's not good.
My favorite bubbles are the ones that have a complete opening.
Yes, right. Those are the right. Best bubbles. Yes.
That it's just the perfect bubble.
Mm-hmm. Next up, the LG Twins. So they took on the Kiwoom Heroes in a best-of-three wildcard series. And since the Twins ended the season in fourth place and the Heroes ended in fifth place, they started the series with a one-game advantage because the KBO really makes standings matter, which I really like. So even though it was a three-game series, the Twins started technically with one win, and they just needed to win one game to advance, whereas the Heroes needed to. So in the wild card game, it went to extra innings. It took 13 innings, but the Twins won, so they advanced to the best-of-three quarterfinals against their rivals, the Doosan Bears. So in game one, our old friend Chris Flexen, he was really, really good, which is sucky for the Twins. He threw six scoreless innings, and he struck out 11 batters. So, obviously, the Bears went on to win game one. And Flexen has really been good over the last couple of weeks for the Bears. In the month of October, in 31 and two-thirds innings, he has a .85 ERA with 42 strikeouts.
How many innings was that, you said?
31 and two-thirds.
Jeez.
And then basically all in all for the entire year, he has a 3.01 ERA in 116 and two-thirds innings with 97 hits allowed, 30 walks, and 132 strikeouts. So good for him, obviously.
Yeah, he's been good.
Yeah. I don't know where he's going to pitch next year, but at the minimum, he's earned himself an invite to spring training somewhere if he chooses to, you know, come back to the MLB.
Oh, yeah. I could see a team pouncing on him with how many people have been with how many people have been coming back.
Was he an Alderson drafty, or is he around when Alderson got here?
He was an Alderson drafty, I believe, 2011, 2012.
Yeah, that makes you think. I wouldn't hate it.
I mean, I'd love it.
Flexen, welcome home, bud.
2012, so yeah, definitely.
We sent him out on loan.
And a sandy drafty.
Well, he was really flexing his muscles over there, so.
He was.
God damn it. Again, with these fucking jokes, dude. No, I mean, I think I've railed against the Mets being stubborn in terms of not exploring these other avenues of adding talent, either through Asia or Cuban markets in the past. And who knows if that was, how much of that is the Wilpons, how much of that is Sandy's preference. Hopefully it was mostly the Wilpons, but I mean, this is a guy that Sandy's front office drafted, so maybe there's a connection there. And hell yeah, I'll roll the dice on Flexen. Absolutely.
He's not going to really be any worse than any other, you know, kind of minor free agent signing. So yeah.
We've seen so many, like we've talked about how many starters that they need anyway. So,
yeah.
Like he could be the sixth or seventh guy, and then it's, you could just throw a dart on it.
I mean, it's not like this is totally out of nowhere either, right? Like we've seen stretches from Flexen in the minors where he was excellent and where he's shown really impressive stuff, like a really nice fastball curve combo. So it's not like a huge stretch to imagine that he got healthier, got a little bit more fit, tweaked something or some combination of any of that and became really good, like I don't, or at least viable as a major league starter.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like we sent someone, give me a name, help me, Walker Lockett over there, and he's blowing away. Like, all right, then it's like, all right, well, he's striking out 12 guys for 9, but it's still Walker Lockett. It's like, no, Chris Flexen had good stuff. I could buy this.
So back to the Twins, game 2. It was a slugfest. And the Twins were able to crack Raul Alcantara, who was the Bears' ace. But the Bears also touched up the Twins' pitchers even more. And the Twins lost game 2, so that knocked them out of the playoffs. So the Bears, dreaded rivals, they're going to go face the KT Wiz in the semifinals. And then whoever wins that is going to go on to face the NC Dinos in the Korea Series. So definitely rooting for the Dinos, just because how could you not root for a team named the Dinos?
Now I have an important paleontological, whatever, paleontology-related question.
Okay.
What kind of dinosaur do they have as a mascot?
Oh, T-Rex.
Oh, it's a T-Rex? Okay.
Yeah.
That's acceptable.
I mean, it's, you're not gonna, would you have a baseball team and then use like a freaking Diplodocus? No. Why would you do that? It's like, yeah, go Archaeopteryx. This is... No one likes Archaeopteryx. This is, I can't even say it.
Yeah.
Lucas, I mean, I just sent a picture of him in Slack.
What the fuck? That's not a T-Rex. What is this thing? This is an abomination of nature is what this is.
But those are the best T-Rexes then.
It has a long neck. That's like a brontosaurus. Well, brontosaurus isn't an actual dinosaur, right? Wasn't that something that was...
No, it is. This is a fight I've had with many people, yes. Originally, it was like a misclassified fossil, and it was really an apatosaurus fossil.
Right.
But, and it was misclassified, but years and years and years later, I think like in the 80s or 90s, like an actual more closely related fossil was found, and it was basically deemed the brontosaurus.
Okay.
I was thinking of the wrong logo, because, yeah, that is clearly not a Tyrannosaurus Rex.
Well, it seems like they have multiple mascots different dinos. All right, that I actually like more. Like, you tried out a whole lineup of dinosaurs. That's pretty cool.
I like that he has the big Cespedes pendant. That really makes it...
Welcome to Dinosaur Avenue Audio. We're still working on our adaptation of the Shortstop Avenue Audio jingle. We'll get back to you next week.
Amazing Avenue's number one dinosaur podcast.
Yep.
Hell yeah. Finally, last and definitely least are the Swallows. They went 2-4 this week. They didn't lose any ground in the standings. They're still 24.5 games behind the Giants, so that's good. 40-68-10 on the year. Basically, it's been the case for the last month, 2 months, whatever, maybe entire season. I feel like it was good for like maybe the first 3 weeks or so. But obviously a bad week for the Swallows. But Munetaka Murakami did something last week that hasn't happened in the NPB in 41 years.
He hit 4 home runs in a game.
No.
Hit the cycle.
No.
That seems way too long for a cycle.
Get it.
As I was saying it, I was like, "Oh, that's a stupid answer." To
is,
that
it a, is it a single game thing? Or?
It is a single game thing. Yes.
All right. What are the other weird single game things that could happen? Steal all the bases.
Yes. What?
Yeah, oh. I got it.
he's a power hitting corner infielder, but he stole 3 bases in 1 inning.
Yeah.
He singled, then he stole second, then he stole third. And then he stole home when the pitcher tried to pick off the trailing runner at second.
Excellent.
And then in typical Swallows fashion, they blew that game. They had a 6-run lead, and they lost, so.
They are truly the Asian approximation of the Mets for us. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. A loss like that is a really tough one to swallow, but, you know.
Come on.
I'm going to fucking hang up.
Verizon just turned on 5G across the country. With the coverage of 5G nationwide and in more and more cities, the unprecedented performance of ultra-wideband, the fastest 5G in the world. Ultra-wideband is so fast, you can download an album in seconds. Verizon 5G won't just change how your phone works, it will change how businesses do everything. This is the 5G America's been waiting for, only from Verizon. 5G ultra wideband available only in parts of select cities. 5G nationwide available in 1800 plus cities. Global claim based on open signal and dependent analysis during the period January 31st through April 30th, 2020.
This is advertiser content.
We now have 2.3 million people incarcerated in America. Less than 7% of them are incarcerated for violent crime.
That's attorney Jeffrey Robinson, director of the ACLU Trone Center for Justice and Equality. His work inspired the making of Who We Are, a podcast by Ben and Jerry's and produced by Vox Creative. Who We Are, A Chronicle of Racism in America, is hosted by Peabody Award-winning journalist Carvel Wallace.
Surely you knew this was a racist country. What does that mean for us today?
The prison population in the United States has increased 700% since 1970. Black Americans make up almost 40% of it.
We didn't get here by accident. I didn't know these things because I hadn't been taught them. And then the question is, why wasn't I taught them? Because this information, it may be hidden, but it's hiding in plain sight.
Who We Are takes a historic look at the disease of racism in America and traces it back to its tipping points. This includes the tipping point we're at today.
I think Americans are watching and thinking and looking at this issue in ways they never have before. And that's why I say this is our last best chance. Because if we don't get it right this time, where America is headed is someplace I don't think anybody wants to go.
How do we make our last best chance count? Listen to Who We Are, a podcast by Ben and Jerry's and produced by Vox Creative. Now streaming wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, so the Sydney Blue Sox did not announce who the final player that's going to be going over there to Australia is, but that's okay because the Mets themselves announced a bunch of signings, so we have some guys to talk about.
Oh, yeah.
A bunch of those players, they're all minor league deals, 11 guys in total. 2 of them, Luis Carpio and Harold Gonzalez, they're homegrown guys that became free agents and the team re-signed them. 4 of them are guys that were signed last season, but they didn't actually play because the season got canceled. David Rodriguez, Jinushree Fargas, Jake Hager, and Bruce Maxwell. And then the remaining 5 guys are all newcomers. There's infielder Mitchell Tolman, right-handed pitcher Oscar De La Cruz, and then 3 former major leaguers, Aradis Vizcaino, Malik Smith, and Jose Peraza. Tolman, kind of boring. But he's a guy that Lucas probably is going to like. He's a big OBP guy. His OBP is 100 points. Yeah. His OBP is 100 points above his batting average for a career, and he doesn't strike out a lot. So that has Lucas written all over it.
Yep. Yep. I'm in. You son of a bitch. I'm in.
Oscar De La Cruz, he's kind of interesting. He was one of the better players that got released a couple of months ago when all the major league teams were releasing all their minor leaguers en masse because it wasn't going to be season. He's a former Cubs prospect. He was ranked in their top 10 as recently as 2018, but he got popped for steroids that year, so that cost him a lot of time. But the stuff did seem solid after he came back in 2019. Low 90s fastball.
Mm-hmm. He's a real prospect, I think.
Yeah, he is.
Yeah.
Like, low 90s probably fastball. Make the Mets list.
Yeah. I'm not really sure if he qualifies.
But I'm just saying, like, in terms of, like, talented players in the minors.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Like, he would be on the upper echelon.
Yep. So good fastball and above average curve, developing changeup that kind of flashes average to above average. The Cubs made him a reliever about halfway through the 2019 season. He was actually a little bit better than he was as a starter, so maybe he's kind of learned and developed a reliever's repertoire since then. But, you know, definitely a guy that's going to find himself on the other players of note list. Maybe he'll find himself on the 2021 top prospect list. Who knows? Mm. We have yet to really give much thought to that, but it'll definitely be interesting this year, given everything that's happened.
And, I mean, it'd be real nice to find a relief arm as a free minor league signing.
Yeah, I mean, they kind of had the same thing. Maybe not necessarily as high upside and not a starter, but they kind of did the same thing last year with Steven Gonsalves. And didn't exactly work out for them because Mets.
Yeah.
But then those other three players, Vizcaino, Smith, and Peraza, I think they're all pretty good pickups. Vizcaino's coming off of some pretty major shoulder surgery. He missed the majority of the 2019 season and then all of this past 2020 season. But when he's been healthy, he's been good. So that's a pretty good pickup, I think.
For sure.
And, you know, as we've gone over the last couple of weeks, the Mets have been, they've done a pretty solid job identifying relievers who might bounce back in the past. So he might be another guy we could add to that list. Malik Smith, his bat was really, really, really bad the last 2 years. But yeah. Before that, the year before that, you know, 2017, 2018, it was slightly above average. So maybe he bounces back, maybe he doesn't, but regardless, you know, there's probably a really, really small chance that he has, like, any kind of major role on the team next year. And if he does, it means that he got good. So,
yeah.
Or things went disastrously wrong for the Mets.
Yeah.
But even not if, that he's – sorry, go ahead, Thomas.
I was going to say you could just – he's the type of guy you could stick on your bench as, like, a speed defense guy too.
That's exactly what I was going to say. With, like, with the extra roster spot, like – center, excellent center field defender who steals 40 bases a year. Like that's a player on your bench that kind of got pushed out as bullpens expanded, but with that extra bench spot now, I think it makes a lot of sense. He's not that different from Vargas.
I was going to say that like he's kind of like a better, higher ceiling offensive version of Billy Hamilton.
Yeah,
yeah. I say he is also the kind of guy that the last couple of years the Mets have been trading for. Mersnicks and the
I'm
Hamilton.
Glad to see that the Wilpon team could get one more in.
At least they didn't trade Matthew Allen for him.
God. Yeah, like Matthew Allen. That's such a you can't trust anybody with two first names. So, no. Get rid of him.
No.
Also, Malik Smith's only 27, which is wild to me.
Yeah.
Yeah, it feels like he's been around forever.
Yeah.
Same thing with Jose Peraza. He's still pretty young.
Yeah,
he hasn't been good lately, but he has had success not too long ago, so he's a bounce back candidate.
But like these are the type of dudes I want to fill AAA with.
Yep.
Yes.
Like mid 20s bounce back candidates guys, because like signing like the 32-year-old ones, they're probably not going to. But at least you could see the possibility of these guys, one of these guys being a quality major league player again, because they're young enough to do that, and. Mm-hmm. Like, it's not like the Mets or the Dodgers here where they have a ton of prospects that you could fill AAA with. Like, they just don't. All their prospects are young.
No. I mean, every
they literally
year,
don't.
Yeah, they just don't. They can't. Like, AAA is going to have to be vets. And
I mean, even when you do have prospects, though, every year at AAA, you should pull up your roster and be like, all right, X, Y, and Z prospects are going to be here. We're going to fill every other position with reclamation guys. There's no reason not to.
Just give yourself all those lottery tickets. Like, some years, all of them are going to bust out, and you're not going to get any, but some years you get one of them, and I'm not saying it's a Justin Turner situation, but even if you get a solid player, that's a huge W for your roster.
I mean, I'm ballparking the percentages, but, like, you do this 100 times. 90 times, you get nothing.
Mm-hmm.
5 or 6 times you get someone who, or let's say 5 times you get someone who comes up and gives you some useful time as a bench bat. 2 or 3 times you get someone who actually fixes themselves and becomes a useful player. And then every once in a while you get a Max Muncy where it's just, oh, we found a star because we developed this guy better, right? And there's no reason not to do it.
For sure.
Literally only costs a monthly contract, which is very, very minimal.
Especially when you already own the AAA team, right? They own, I assume the Syracuse Mets were part of the purchase, so.
Yeah, I think the Cyclones are owned by, like, the actual Wilpon Enterprises or whatever it is, like Sterling. Yeah.
I've seen differing reports. Some of them say that, okay, the Cyclones are owned now by Cohen and the Mets. But that goes against what the Wilpons themselves have on their, you know, Sterling Equities website that shows what they actually own. Mm-hmm. And it always showed the Cyclones as being a separate entity from the Mets. So I don't know if the whole thing was included. I mean, on one hand, it would make sense. They're just giving up all of their baseball operations and ownership. But on the other hand, if it's not explicitly stated, then why would they be giving it up? You know, they're not giving up SNY. So,
yeah.
But, I mean, I guess it'll be, we'll see.
Yeah.
This is all a very long way of saying this is a really nice slate of minor league signings.
I was very pleasantly surprised because it's normally like Aaron Harang, and I'm like, oh, I don't care. But, like, at least 3 of these dudes I'm going to keep an eye on, though.
Mm-hmm. And before we move on to the meat and potatoes, the show this week, there's a little bit more minor league news got to address. We haven't really mentioned too much on the show, but obviously the Mets Instructional League has been going on the last couple of weeks. It started at the beginning of October, and they just shut it down about 2 weeks early because, according to Tim Healy from Newsday, 2 players at camp tested positive for coronavirus. So sucks that everyone's going to miss those last 2 weeks or so, but they got in the bulk of the camp, so it's not like anyone is really going to suffer from not getting enough reps in. Most of the news and quotes and everything that comes out from these things is pretty generic catch-all stuff, but Joshua Wolf, Shervian Newton, Pete Crow Armstrong, and Isaiah Green have all been mentioned as kind of standing out and really taking some steps forward, so definitely good to hear.
I had not seen the shows how lax my preparation for the pod is. had not seen that Newton noticed Newton was getting positive comments, and that one is exciting one to me because the upside on him and Jalen Palmer, who's a very similar kind of profile, is just stupid high.
Yeah, you love to see stuff like that.
Basically, with Newton, it was starting to get to the point where it's like, yeah, you've been tantalizing us with your potential for a while now. Now it's time to put up or shut up. And he kind of didn't last year, and it was pretty concerning. So it's good to see that he's doing better in camp. I mean, how things will translate on the field, who knows, but
yeah,
better than, like we've said many times, you would rather hear good news than bad news or no news.
I mean, you just like drool over what Newton is if he puts it together. Like, it's just Javi Baez ish.
Yeah, that's a solid comp in terms of skill set.
Which is like his 99.999 percentile outcome. I'm not in any way making that comp, but that's what you can dream on.
Yep,
that's like the best case scenario here. Mm-hmm. And if you get some of that, it's great.
All right, so
also smart on the Mets for closing it, by the way. We didn't mention that, but
yeah.
And they shuttered it completely, I think, because they were like, I think I remember reading that they didn't think they would have enough time, like it wasn't worth it to bring everyone back in 2 weeks and like do the last few days. So
yeah, I mean, if you're going to be quarantining for 14 days, then
smart on the Mets to do that.
Yep.
Instead of just like powering through.
They're doing another instructional camp in the Dominican Republic, and obviously it's primarily for all those international kids, but maybe it'll be interesting to see maybe if they bring anybody over to that to give them more reps. Unlikely, but you know, in this weird 2020 season, you kind of have to get at bats and innings wherever you can. So
yeah, it must be so difficult to try to, like, because we're on the outside looking in, and I think about how difficult it is going to be for us to figure out who's doing what in the Mets organization, like, to actually have your jobs depend on it, and you're trying to figure this out during a pandemic. I don't know how you would do it. Like, I would be trying to some people.
All right, so right after it became official, Steve Cohen had been approved, and then he was the new owner of the New York Mets. He basically cleaned house. General manager Brody Van Wagenen was let go. Special assistant to the GM Omar Naya was let go. Assistant GM of player development Alec Bard was let go. Assistant GM of systematic development Adam Guttridge let go.
He was the one with the system, right? Like the weird, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. The I always make the joke that it was like the same thing as Pacoda.
Yeah.
And executive director of player development Jared Banner. So Sandy, in a statement, said, "I want to thank Brody, Allard, Adam, Jared for their contributions over the last 2 years. And I especially want to thank Omar for his long and distinguished service to the Mets in many important capacities." So you guys surprised by any of these moves?
No.
Not at all.
Would you have preferred any of these guys stay put or?
No.
Goodbye.
Yeah, not really.
I'm a little surprised about Omar.
Yeah, it sucks that Omar's gone, but I'm fine with it.
I would actually have been interested to see. I don't think we ever really got any insight into who was behind their draft strategy the last couple years.
Tremuda and Tanis,
and they're
who are both staying.
Oh, okay. Then I'm happy. The whole scheme of throw all the money up top. I really like that. So I hope that's something they continue to at least explore doing.
They also ran drafts under Sandy, so.
Yeah, those are Sandy guys, so.
Okay, well, I knew those guys were the guys who were usually running the scouting. I just wasn't sure who came up with the idea to just kind of go all out up top.
That might have been like Brody or somebody else, but.
Yeah.
It could have been, and at the end of the day, I think that it has been proven an effective strategy, so.
When the right players are on the board, yeah, I think
when quite well. When there are people worth it, and then it's an effective strategy. So I mean,
that's they'll the only, continue. That's the only like positive systematic change I've seen in the Mets with Brody at the helm. So I hope that's something they continue. But otherwise, I don't care about any of these people.
Yeah, you could easily replace all of them, and they're obviously going to. But you could easily upgrade on pretty much every one of those dudes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
How about building an analytics department that's more than Chris Christie's son-in-law, was it? Or kid? Whatever.
Nephew, something like that. He's related to him somehow, but.
Yeah. Step one. hire some real analysis guys.
So, obviously, the position of general manager needs to be filled now. And there's like a million people out there that have the qualifications to be a GM, but the stars don't necessarily always align. Like a guy like David Stearns, he's a Mets fan, he's a Harvard grad, he interned with the Mets in the late 2000s, and he came really close to getting a job in the organization. So he checks all the boxes on paper, but currently he's the Brewers general manager and president of baseball operations, so it's kind of a lateral move or downgraded. And it doesn't make sense that he'd want to give that up to come over to an uncertain situation with the Mets right now, when he's, you know, had some success with the Brewers. So there's a bunch of people out there. quickly were just kind of going through different articles and guys that are available and women that are available and just kind of have like a short list of people that it would make sense and they have good qualifications. Top of my list, obviously, is Thomas.
Yes.
I think you could do a good job.
Thomas, look, are you available?
Yes.
All right, then.
I will simply sign good players.
And not sign bad players?
Not sign bad players. Also, okay. Trade bad players away and acquire good players for them.
I'm taking notes. I'm very quickly writing all of this down.
I know it's revolutionary to trade your bad players for your good ones. Uh-huh. But I think that it's an effective strategy, and I will employ it if I.
Are you presenting at Saber Seminar this year?
I took one public speaking class, so while I was in college, and it went quite well. I got an A.
Nice.
So here we are.
Well, what's your degree? Check all the boxes.
I was an English major and a history minor. So,
So
I could hire someone else to do the analytics.
Let me just update my LinkedIn real quick.
So first guy here that we got is Matt Arnold, who is the Brewers senior vice president and assistant GM to the aforementioned David Stearns. He's worked with Tampa for about a decade, and then when Stern became GM, he brought Arnold to lay some of the analytical groundwork that the Tampa Bay Rays have. And he was a finalist to be Pirates GM a couple of years ago. So he seems like a guy that's thought highly of. He has all the qualifications needed and just kind of needs to be given a chance. I wouldn't be averse to it because basically I don't know nothing about the guy, so...
Yeah, I think that's I mean, I like Sandy as a person and as an executive. I would like them. I think he's also very old school, so I would like to see someone hired who's more in touch with the newer generation of analytics, and Arnold would seemingly fit that bill.
Mm. And like from the two, I think the two names I remember are Heck and what was the other name that I remember reading? It was Heck and let me figure this out. And Owens and Billy Owens, mm-hmm. which is so like those two names are names that would fulfill that in kind of focusing on the younger side of things and the newer side of things. So
if you are looking for someone that's on the younger side and is all about analytics, then this next guy in alphabetical order here would check all the boxes, and it's a gentleman by the name of Paul DePodesta, who is the chief strategy officer.
Bring back Depot! Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Obviously, he was with the Mets for the first half of Sandy's tenure before he went over to the Cleveland Browns. And he went from a bad situation with the Mets to a worse situation in Cleveland because they are a really, really bad team.
And yeah, but I think he and what's his name? So, was it Sashi Brown?
Yes.
I think they did an excellent job of building up that team, and then freaking Dorsey came in and did stupid things with it, but, you know.
And Depot stayed. Like, he survived all of it,
which
was interesting.
Mm-hmm.
And doing a little better this year.
They're
still
weird.
Not great.
I mean, they just hung on to – they really screwed themselves with their coaching choices, and then that led to compound effects, and now Baker's kind of broken. Anyway, I think Depot did a good job, even though people would argue with that, I imagine.
But Sandy is back in control now. The Wilpons are gone, if that was ever an issue. And, you know, if he's interested in coming back to baseball, there is a chair open for him.
Yes, please do.
Next guy that Thomas just mentioned, Bobby Heck. He's the special assistant to the general manager for the Tampa Bay Rays. He's been with them for about a decade, and before that, he was a scout with Houston. And he's got a background in scouting and player development, and then obviously he's got his finger in all the analytical stuff that the Rays are known for. Again, don't know too much about him, but I like the background. Obviously, how could you not like the name? So good back page fodder.
I mean, it's amazing how little we know about any of these guys until they start pumping their credentials to the media during the hiring process.
Yep.
It really is, yeah.
Next guy up is Dan Kantrowitz, who is the vice president of scouting for the Chicago Cubs. What the hell did it autocorrect to? Robots?
Robots, yes.
So he's been with the Cardinals and the A's in a couple of different scouting and analytical roles before getting hired by the Cubs. Again, solid background. Can't say anything bad about him because I don't really know much, but it's a fine background.
It is. I mean, I don't know that I'd say the Cubs have done a particularly great job of scouting over the last couple of years.
On the pitching side, at least.
Yeah.
Well, he's also
even on the hitting side, like their farm is kind of.
It's also not like Chris Bryant wasn't like a hard scout.
No. Yeah.
He's also.
They didn't reinvent the wheel saying Chris Bryant's good.
He was also in Houston when they scouted and signed like Correa and Springer and guys like that. So he does have some. Okay. I mean, it's hard to say one person, you know, you don't know one person is responsible for whatever, but he was around in that organization when they had, you know, the early 2010s when they signed a lot of those dudes.
Mm-hmm. So you should deserve some credit for Correa, getting Correa over Buxton, right? And Springer was a late first round pick, right? Like later in the first? I might be wrong on that. Again, and it's hard to attribute credit to any one person.
Mm-hmm. Next up is Kim Ng. She's senior vice president for baseball operations for Major League Baseball. How could you not love the credentials? She's a baseball fan from Flushing. I mean, that's doesn't get better. But she's had a variety of front office roles for a bunch of different organizations over like 3 decades or so. She's interviewed a bunch of times for different teams, never been given a shot. I don't know if there's a specific reason for that or if it's just because, you know, she's an outsider in the old boys club and they don't infringing on any of their kind of.
That's probably the reason.
Yeah.
So I'm not going to wave away that reason. I'm sure there's a role there, but I've also heard a couple times that she might just be more interested in the like she's got a pretty high up position in the commissioner's office, right? It's not that.
Yeah, she's basically like Joe Torre is the president or whatever. She's the vice president.
Right. So it's not like she's a low rank. Like she's arguably higher up than most GMs. And I could imagine there's. She's not super eager to leave that position for just any opportunity. Now, if she's a Met fan and we just got a brand new GM with lots of money, that perhaps that's enticing.
Mm-hmm.
That'll be an interesting one.
Yeah, I mean, I'd be all for it. Me she's too. Obviously extremely qualified.
Yep. Next up is Billy Owens. He's the assistant GM and director of player personnel for the Oakland Athletics. He's been with the A's for about 20 years as a scout, as a hitting coach, director of player personnel, assistant GM. His background's in scouting and player development. You know, fine, very fine resume. And really anybody that's come from Oakland, you know that they're top notch because obviously a lot of good has come out of Oakland, baseball development wise.
One thing that I've noticed going through these names is that I really look at the teams that they worked for and be like, oh, can they bring the type of, like, I don't want to say corner cutting, but the type of, like, necessary things that they've had to do to compete as a Rays and an A's organization and then bring it to a team that also has a ton of money.
Mm-hmm.
So, like,
that's the thing, like, with Sandy, the goal was never, like, I mean, from a fan's perspective, for people that were sabermetrically inclined. The goal was never that we wanted to see Sandy take the payroll and trim it down to, you know, a crazy low level. It's that the payroll would stay where it was when he came in and it would just be used more effectively. So.
Right. Instead of having 3 of those gambles and even with smart play teams, the only one of those work out, you sign a sure thing and then you get 2 other gambles and you're better at the gambles. So.
And like, And, like, Sandy, like, never really spent money in his career because of the places he was at, but, like, I'm pretty sure if Cohen is like, you have up to the tax, he's not gonna be like, I'll spend $115. like, he's like, I'll just keep the rest of it. You know, like, I'm pretty sure if you gave Sandy Alderson the opportunity to go sign one of the best guys in free agency, he'll be like, sure, let's go.
I think Sandy would probably, not that I'm gonna sound like an arrogant ass here. Like, I'm sure Sandy would have some of the same trepidations around a guy like George Springer that I would. Right, like I don't think Sandy's the kind of guy who's going to give a 32-year-old center fielder a big contract. I do think he'd go pay like a bunch of mid-range pitching or get a mid-range center fielder and do a bunch of stuff if he has more money. So I think that's arguably just as valuable. So
yeah, it's going to be interesting. It's going to be interesting.
Mm-hmm. Next up is JP Ricciardi, the special advisor to the president of baseball operations for the San Francisco Giants. Obviously, he was brought in when Sandy first came in, and then he left when Brody took over. So he has a relationship with Sandy. So that mixed record in the 10 years or so that he was the GM of the Toronto Blue Jays. But again, Sandy specifically brought him over when he first became GM. So obviously, he knows more about the ins and outs and all that kind of stuff than we do. And he's given him high praise. So
I think that's the candidate we've listed so far that I would want the least.
Well, if that's the case, I'm about to blow your mind then. Final candidate is John
Jeff
Rickle.
Wilpon.
Oh, no.
No, no. Is that Jeff's music?
John Rickle, the senior vice president and senior strategy officer with the New York Mets. He's been interim GM twice. The first time when Omar was fired in 2010, and then in 2018 when Sandy went on his medical leave. And he's still in the organization, so I guess Sandy likes something about him, because he could have fired him if he wanted to.
By all accounts, he's like a good executive.
Yeah.
Like, at what he does.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that's what he's going to do. He's just going to...
And the thing that I think is amazing is it's possible he advances... Now that the Wilpons are gone.
Yeah.
I wonder if they would, since they're getting into this, the game a little late here in this offseason, I wonder if they'd like do something temporary, go through this offseason with just kind of Sandy guiding the ship and then look for someone long term later. I don't know.
That's kind of what, when Sandy first got announced as like way back weeks ago now, when the sale was like almost done, and Sandy first got leaked as, like, the guy that he's going to bring along and stuff. That's what I thought the plan was. Mm-hmm. Like,
yeah.
Like, when I first read that Sandy's coming back, I was like, oh, Sandy's going to be the GM for a year.
Yeah, and then, that's what I was thinking.
And, like, even so, like, Sandy's on the older side. I don't think he's going to be president for long, long. So I wonder if they also hire someone with the idea that they take Sandy's job in a few years. Mm-hmm. Like kind of like swing on an upside guy who could be here for like 10 years as like a president thing.
Mm-hmm. Yep. That makes
like,
sense to me.
That's the other side of it too. Like a guy like Heck or Owens is because those are the two names I've seen the most, but like someone like that is interesting because you could see them take over for Sandy before like too long. And then another GM comes in a few years. So this might just be a short-term thing. Like you said, yeah, I could see that for multiple ways.
I hadn't given the thought that Jeff Wilpon auditions himself to be GM.
Mm. Oh, didn't you hear? He wasn't fired. He quit.
Well, he resigned. He resigned. Right.
He probably got. Did he get the most votes in history?
Oh.
Probably.
Oh, no. Oh boy.
So who your two or three, however many guys you know you want to take care, put in order, but who are the guys that you like the most?
Of the names we listed, I'd have Arnold, Ng, and I don't know that I have a third one. Mm-hmm. Billy Owens to me strikes me as a bit of an old, like I know he's a younger player, but he's definitely someone from the scouting side, and I feel like that's more old school baseball. I don't see like the analytics background I'd hope to see in a GM here. That said, I don't know anything about his qualifications, but Arnold and Ng are up top for me.
It's hard. It's difficult to sit here and like pontificate about this because
Right. Like, I don't know so much.
Yeah, like I could be like, I could get mad when the Mets sign a player or be happy when the Mets sign a player because I could go and, if I want to, watch them, or I could look at their Fangraphs or their Baseball Reference pages or whatever, or do both. But this, I can't really go to the tape or go to Baseball Reference to, like, figure out if I like this executive. Like, it's going to be one of those things where we're going to have to kind of take it and be like, I really just want someone who has a...
I really just want competence.
Yeah, I just want someone who I could look at their resume and be like, oh, that makes sense. And for most of the people that you mentioned outside of, like, Riccardi and Rico and stuff, like, I would be cool with. Like, I'd be like, all right, I see why the Mets wanted that person. Because we can only judge them when they're here as GM, you know? Like,
right. Yeah, it's like we were saying with the money and being a GM at a team that has a small budget, they might be radically different executives at a team where they have a much larger budget. So you just don't know until they're in that situation.
That I think that's why Arnold is the most interesting to me, though, because Rays, Brewers, not a lot of cash. Mets with Steve Cohen, potentially lots of cash.
It's kind of like the Andrew Friedman model.
Yep, exactly.
Exactly.
And look how that turned. It's not like Friedman's running around on the Dodgers like, no, we don't want to spend money. He just gave Mookie Betts big
money.
He's leveraging everything that he used to do without money and also money.
Right. He's like, I'm going to go trade for and sign Mookie Betts. And then I'm also going to unearth Max Muncy out of nowhere, you know, just because I can. And they've also built the best developmental system in baseball. I would think that's fair to say at this point.
Yeah. I think they're the flagship franchise in baseball right now.
I mean, that's what lets you trade for Mookie Betts one offseason and then turn around and probably be the favorites to trade for Francisco Lindor the next offseason.
Yeah, if they wanted to, they could easily outpace. Like there was I think it was Passan tweeted today, I can't remember, or maybe Morosi, one of those two. But they were basically like, the Indians are going to wait for the Mets to do stuff.
They wanted Jimenez and McNeil, which I don't think I'd actually do.
I think you could negotiate them down from that. But also, like, the Dodgers could roll up and just offer whatever and, like, not even hurt their future at all, not even hurt, like, their prospect list at all, really, like, and get Francisco Lindor, and the Mets would have to, like, go for broke and trade everyone and just have the worst farm system in the league. And that still might not top it. It's just one of those things where the Dodgers are such a machine right now.
Well, it all comes back to competent executives making the right decisions.
Yeah.
All right. Anybody have any last words for the week?
I got nothing.
Guess not.
Usually I've got something ridiculous, but I've got nothing today.
All right.
Well, I appreciate that the owner is extremely online.
Yeah, that's true. He's
breaking news. He just dunked all over one of the Barstool people.
He did, yeah.
Oh, my God.
I don't think I'm going to follow him. If he doesn't follow me, I'm not going to follow him.
Wow. At Steve Cohen. Follow Steve's. Steve's unite.
That's true, right? As Steve's, we need to take care of each other.
Uh-huh.
All right, so... if anyone has any questions, comments, whatever, you can send us an email at our email address from complexofqueens@gmail.com. Follow us on Twitter and shoot us questions there. I'm at Steve Saipa. Lucas is at ElVlahos343. Ken is at Ken1191. And Thomas is at SadMetSeason, SDN. Subscribe to the podcast wherever you get your podcast from. Rate and review it. And, of course, thank you for listening. And we will be back next week. Until then, love the Mets. Love the Mets.